Track 14. Our resident historian traces the early life and remarkable career of Sir John Mills, from his beginnings in North Elmham to becoming one of Britain's most enduring and admired film stars.
North Elmham was the site of the Norfolk County School, the brainchild of Reverend J.L. Brereton, rector of Little Massingham, an educational reformer who had already founded a similar school in Devon. The target market for the school was the sons of local farmers. Unfortunately for Brereton, the new school failed in the face of the Great Agricultural Depression and finally closed in 1895, its grand and spacious buildings lying derelict until it was purchased by a shipowner, E.H. Watts, in 1903 as a gift to Dr. Barnardo's. Soon after, it reverted to education, reopening as the Watts Naval Training School for Boys. One of the teaching staff there was a Lewis Mills, and it was at this once grand but lonely spot that his wife Edith gave birth to John Mills in 1908. He was 14 years younger than his only sister Annette, who was later to encourage greatly his theatrical ambitions. Both were destined for show business. Annette, originally an actress and dancer credited with her first husband Robert Ciel with the introduction of the Charleston to Britain in 1925, but who became most famous for being the partner of the puppet Muffin the Mule on children's television of the 1950s. John was, of course, to follow a very distinguished theatrical career himself, but obviously at a later date. His education spanned a number of schools, but at the age of 12, he was enrolled at the City of Norwich High School for Boys. This had been started in 1910 as an amalgamation of three separate schools and was based at St Giles, Norwich, where it was to remain until moving out of town during the Second World War. It was renamed after its change of location and is today Langley School. John Mills was a very slight build, and he was later to say that he had been the subject of bullying in his early days at the school. This experience may have tailed off a little as his sporting prowess became more evident. He was a good all-rounder, coxing the school's four at rowing and being a member of the cricket 11. Best of all, he was an excellent footballer, reputedly offered a trial by Norwich City while at the school. His sporting expertise continued into his adult life. His son Jonathan was later to report that in the parents' match against his prep school, John took all 10 wickets. His academic prowess had not been as distinguished as that on the sports field, and on leaving school he worked as a clerk in Ipswich while engaging in amateur dramatics. But his mind was firmly on developing a theatrical career, and he soon moved to London. He may have felt that, in London, there would be more opportunities. But initially, he was employed as a commercial traveller by Sanitas. His fortune soon changed, and he joined a touring company in 1929, visiting the Far East. This proved a very fortunate move for him. Not only did he meet, in China, Mary Haley Bell, who more than a decade later was to become his second wife, but in Singapore, his performance in a production of Journey's End was observed by Noel Coward. The master was sufficiently impressed both to put him in touch with useful contacts in London and to consider him for parts in his own productions. On his return, John appeared in 1931 in Noel Coward's Cavalcade and the following year in his Words and Music. It was also in 1932 that he made his film debut, and a succession of roles followed. In 1935, he was sufficiently well known to be cast as the hero in the film of C.S. Forrester's book Brown on Resolution. More film roles followed, interspersed with theatre work. One of his last pre-war films in 1939 was the extremely successful Goodbye, Mr. Chips, for which Robert Donat won an Oscar for his performance in the title role. That year was busy. As well as filming, he played Shakespeare at the Old Vic. And as war was declared, he joined the Royal Engineers, later being commissioned as a second lieutenant. His military service was relatively brief, as he was medically discharged as a result of a stomach ulcer in 1942, and had in any event been interrupted by occasional film work. This included the Noel Coward production of In Which We Serve, a film made with government assistance to boost morale based on the aftermath of the sinking of Mountbatten's HMS Kelly. The film starred Coward himself, Mills, Bernard Miles, and provided a debut role for Richard Attenborough. Also early in the war, in 1941, John was to marry his second wife, Mary Haley Bell, their marriage lasting the rest of his life. The war undoubtedly had a generally positive impact on his career. In Which We Serve was just the start. Other wartime films included Coward's This Happy Breed and We Dive at Dawn. After the war ended, there was a spate of films based, sometimes a little loosely, on the events of the previous years, and John featured in The Colditt Story and I Was Monty's Double, amongst others. Perhaps the best remembered is the later war-based film Ice Cold in Alex, in which he played an officer struggling with alcoholism. He was to reveal that the filming of the final scene in which he downs an ice-cold lager took a long time. Apparently, nothing could be found to add to a glass of water which gave the impression of a foaming glass of lager, so they had to use the real thing. He duly downed the lager with great relish, but a camera fault meant that the scene had to be shot again and again and again. Eventually, he claimed he had become so inebriated that he had to be carried to his dressing room and the scene reshot the next day. But it wasn't just as a warrior. Roles in which he played everything from a cheeky rating to a tormented officer, in which he was making his mark. Of the British post-war film stars, he was perhaps the one who largely eschewed Hollywood and filmed primarily in England. Perhaps his wish to intersperse film roles with theatre ones was a factor, but certainly his popularity at home grew as the range of characters he played widened. He played many parts under the direction of David Lean, including Pip in the 1946 film Great Expectations, scenes from which I can still recall 70 years after I first saw it. He was much in demand. Indeed, he made about 120 films in his career, but listing those adds little to appreciating the quality of the man. Sometimes his true underlying nature shone through in many of the parts he played. All my research suggests he was a thoroughly decent man in every sense. He had first married way back in the early 1930s and was divorced in 1941, enabling him to marry Mary Haley Bell the same year. But the wedding was, of course, a civil ceremony in the heart of wartime. It is an attractive part of his story that 60 years later, the couple had a church service, even though both were by then elderly and almost blind. It proved to be a very happy marriage. In the year 2000, his son Jonathan filmed, at his father's request, an extended interview incorporating a generous helping of the home movies he had shot over the years. These home movies are out of the ordinary. Home movies do not normally feature the likes of Laurence Olivier, Richard Attenborough, Dirk Bogarde, James Mason, and a host of other stars. These do, and the interplay with happy domestic scenes shows the whole Mills family to have been a loving and close unit. In the interview section, John explains how daughter Haley became, almost accidentally, his co-star in Tiger Bay, though he doesn't touch on his rumoured decision not to allow her subsequently to play Lolita. His commitment to family was behind his insistence that they frequently travelled with him to filming locations. They must have all had wonderful times in exotic settings. But perhaps the most moving aspects of the extended interview are those which show the character of the man. In particular, his discussion of his role as Scott of the Antarctic, where he describes his concerns for the surviving members of Scott's family and his anxiety not to distress them unnecessarily. He also discusses the filming of Morning Departure, which told the story of a damaged submarine resting on the sea bottom while the last of the crew await their inevitable death. Before the film was released, there was a real-life disaster when a Royal Marine submarine, HMS Truculent, met with such a situation. John tells how the decision to release the film was made only after consideration of the families of those who had died and with the agreement of the Admiralty. He refers to his relief when, after release, he had letters from the mothers of some of the victims expressing their gratitude that the film had gone ahead. Evidence again of the intimate decency of this great man. He was not just decent. He was daring, refusing the aid of stuntmen. He described how in the filming of Scott of the Antarctic, there was need for the snow across which, as Scott, he was to be seen crossing, to appear virginal. Only limited rehearsal was possible to avoid leaving footprints. As a result, when the scene was filmed, he found himself dangling in a deep crevice, saved only by the harness by which he was attached to the following man, when the untrodden and untested snow beneath him collapsed. We owe that harness a great deal. He was a man with great character and the star of many memorable films. He was also, in the minds of those well qualified to judge, an outstanding actor. In Jonathan's extended documentary and interview, Richard Attenborough describes how Sir John changed the style of acting in movies. Sir John Mills, definitely a national treasure.